I'm Hannah Levine. It is just a moment past 4 o'clock on this Monday, which means it's time for my regular guest, Chris Carey, who volunteers his time every weekend to select and research our classic picks, and then he comes in on Monday to share them with us. And sometimes he makes me really happy by picking out one of my favorite albums by one of my favorite artists. Talking Heads' Fear of Music is on the docket today. Welcome, Chris.
Oh, thanks for having me.
Of course.
Yeah, so this album came out 40 years ago this month in 1979. And in some ways it feels like it's been around a long time, but in other ways it doesn't feel like it's 40 years old, especially when you listen to it. I still think that the Talking Heads are one of those few bands that don't, I mean, obviously they fit into a couple of genres, but they don't sound really time. They don't feel like they fit in a timeline very easily.
Yes, I agree. Even though I associate them, obviously, with like CBGBs and New York and the protopunk things and all that, but I still feel like they have a timeless sort of unique element to the way that they sound.
And if this
that's not locked into one area.
Yeah, if this album came out today and you would hear it, you'd be like, this is great.
Totally.
And it doesn't, you wouldn't think, oh, this came out in 1979.
Yeah.
Yeah, and there's not a lot of bands that do that. There's a few, but not many. And this is one of them. And I've always kind of thought, you know, those bands that can kind of sound like they're out of time are particularly cool bands, in my opinion. But the Talking Heads, of course, are from New York City. They formed in 1975 when David Byrne, Chris Franz, and Tina Weymouth met in art school in, I can't remember the name of the art school right now, but it was in Rhode Island.
School of Design?
In Providence, yeah.
Yeah.
And they met, they first started a band called The Artistics, which is pretty fitting since they were at an art school and they played kind of arty, you know, punk, pre-punk at the time. When they graduated, they moved to New York, and they actually started the Talking Heads as a trio, and their actual first gig was opening for the Ramones in 1975. And if I had a time machine, that would be one of the shows I'd go back to see.
That would be high on your time machine list.
Yeah, but Jerry Harrison wasn't with them at the time. At the time, when they were a trio opening for the Ramones, he was up in Boston, or he may have moved to New York at that point, but he had played with the Modern Lovers, Jonathan Richman's record, and that was a one album band, but that's another amazing album. If you like the Talking Heads, probably should check out the Modern Lovers, because that's
Agreed.
Kind of in the same ballpark. Anyway, so they got together and they got some attention in town and in New York, and they got signed to Sire Records, and they actually happened to release their first record, Talking Heads 77, with the song Psycho Killer on it at about the same time the Son of Sam murders were going on. And so that kind of really fueled their attention, but it was unintentional, because David Byrne had written that song years earlier. But they got enough attention that when they came around to doing their second LP, they were contacted by Brian Eno. And Brian Eno, we've talked about on this segment a lot, because I think he's one of the biggest kind of not household names in rock and roll, in that he's done so much. He's produced so many albums, including the Berlin trilogy by David Bowie, Low, Heroes, and Lodger. And he's worked with Iggy Pop, and of course, and then when he was in Roxy Music, which is one of my favorite bands of all time, and then his first few solo records are amazing. So it's really cool that he reached out to Talking Heads, this guy who has pushed the envelope so much for so long, recognized this in the Talking Heads and wanted to work with him. So he worked with him on the second record, and they got even more attention, mostly due to the cover of Al Green's Take Me to the River. The second album was called More Songs About Buildings and Food. And the funny thing was I think this is the only time the Talking Heads were invited to play on American Bandstand was after that album was released. They enlisted Brian Eno again to work with them on Fear of Music in 1979. They actually worked with him on their 80 album, too, Remain in Light. When they started recording this record, they started recording all the basic tracks in Franz and Weymouth's loft apartment in New York. And then they moved around to three or four different other studios in New York to kind of finish everything off. A lot of critics have noted on how well Eno and the Talking Heads worked on this album. And even, you know, talking to the Talking Heads and Brian Eno himself, they noted how well they meshed on this album. I mean, I think they meshed really well on the three albums they worked together on, but this one's kind of noted for kind of really taking the best of what those two entities had to offer. Commercially, this was, at the time, you know, it still was an indie album. However, it charted in Australia, Canada, New Zealand, UK, and US. It peaked at 21 on the US album chart, which is pretty good for an art kind of indie band in the late 70s. It eventually sold over 500,000 copies, and at the time, it was the Talking Heads' best-selling record. Critical praise from the get-go. Everybody loved it. It made everybody's top record list of 1979. NME actually named it the best record of 1979, and then over time, it's just added to accolades and more accolades, and it's ended up on all these, you know, top, you know, albums list of all time. I know it's one of four Talking Heads records that are on Rolling Stone's top 500 albums of all time, which is, there's only probably a handful of other bands that have done that, like maybe the Beatles and the Stones. I maybe could think of another couple, but there's not very many bands that have four albums on that list. Following this, of course, they released six more albums that were amazing, particularly Remain in Light and Speaking in Tongues and Little Creatures were all particularly favorites of mine. Their legacy is, you know, it's huge because they not only did they kind of help create what became punk, then they helped create what became post-punk, and they were one of the first bands that actually started incorporating world music into what they did. The only other people at the time that were doing this were like Peter Gabriel and Paul Simon. So I think that's pretty cool too. And they're an amazing band, and this is an amazing album. And if all you know about the Talking Heads is Burning Down the House, you need to go out and buy the first like five CDs.
Yeah,
this
was the game changer for me. This was the first album by them that I came across that was not of the mainstream ilk. I am talking with Chris Carey about Talking Heads. Fear of Music came out right around this time, 40 years ago. It is our classic pick of the week. Anything else to add before we get into your first selection?
The only thing is we're going to play the first track, iZembra, and I thought it was pretty cool. I never really understood the words in this, but I never really looked at the... They're all nonsense words. This is an adaptation of a Dadaist poem by a poet by the name of Hugo Ball. All the words are nonsense, but it's also pretty cool in that Brian Eno is one of the people doing the vocals in this.
Oh, really? See, I didn't know that, and this is my favorite song on the album.
And I did not know this either, which is pretty cool, is Robert Fripp of King Crimson plays guitar on this song.
What?
Yeah.
See, learning something new every time. Thank you so much, Chris
Carey.
Oh,
you're welcome. Thanks for having me.